Dear listeners of the program Foresight, my name is Muhammad. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from Munajat al-Muftariqin, meaning the whispered prayer of the utterly poor. Stay tuned.
نهاري دونكم ليل وليلي كله
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. My God, have mercy upon your lowly slave of silent tongue and few good works. Bestow your favors upon him through your plentiful graciousness. Shelter him under your plenteous shade. O generous, O beautiful, O most merciful of the merciful.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. And so Imam Khomeini says, what regret, remorse, and loss can be greater than that after 40 or 50 years of working so hard in order to attain this true knowledge, which is the means of a human being's perfection and happiness, and this pure, true knowledge, which is the remedy for the pains of the cordial deficiencies of every single one of us, and is in fact, as Imam Khomeini says, the image of human perfection. After 40 or 50 years of trying to acquire this knowledge, we are not spiritually benefited by it, and rather this knowledge becomes a cause of tarnishing our heart because it is not able to free us from the dark veils of this materialistic world. So, for example, in order to make it a little more specific and detailed, have we not heard that this world is temporary? Have we not heard that the next world, the hereafter, is the eternal home? So despite this knowledge, does it spiritually benefit us? Sometimes it does, but let's talk about when it doesn't spiritually benefit us. Why does it not spiritually benefit us? Because we are so wrapped up in the materialistic aspect of this world that the knowledge of the next world and such pure and true knowledge does not have an effect upon us. And so, yes, if we are to see the divine and if we are to increase, enhance, strengthen, beautify our ubudiyah, our servitude to Allah, then we must overlook the self.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
أجب دعائي يا رجائي بالرضا والخير أنير طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الغير
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Yusuf.
Consciousness is the great bugbear of materialists. Because there's no material proof for consciousness. They can't reduce consciousness. There's a lot of attempts, but don't believe them ever when they say, oh, consciousness is just chemical exchanges in the body or something. Trust me, They don't even know. I mean, there's such a strong argument for realist philosophy, right? Because there's so many things. People will say to you, everything you know is through sensory perception. This is kind of a post-enlightenment modern man. Everything you know, the mind is tabula rasa. There was nothing on it before you came into the world. Everything you've acquired is through sense perception. I mean, this is a modernist, materialistic argument. But these are fallacies. They're lies that have been perpetrated on modern people by sophists. And the sophists were the same type of people that the ancients were dealing with. For instance, there is nothing in the world, nothing that indicates categories. Nothing. Categories are a complete creation of the mind. There's nothing in the world that says there's something, there's trees. There's nothing in the world that says there's trees. If you go out there and show me an oak tree, that's a name, but that thing, that is a unique thing. There's nothing, there's no other oak on the whole planet. And if you went and examined every single oak on the planet, you will find that they're different from that oak. Just like every human being is different from every other human being. There, look at all the people in this room. Nobody's the same. We resemble each other. There are certain semblances, that's true. But to categorize us, the mind did that. The mind did that. Numbers don't exist in the world. This is two. Where did two come from? Well, there's two. There's one, two. And then plus one is three. One, two, three. The mind did that. That's not in the world. The mind put them together. So mathematics is something that, where did that come from? Where did that ability to do that come from? And this is why Einstein said the only thing to him that was incomprehensible about the world was its comprehensibility. Why are we able to discern all this meaning? How did Newton figure out the universal law of gravity? How did he do that? Where was that? To take an apple falling and to universalize that. So all of these, you know, this modern madness of denying at least the possibility of the mind being outside of this world. You know, that the mind, that consciousness itself is not a material thing. It's an immaterial thing. Just even that possibility, that is a rational proposition. It's not irrational. So this argument that somehow it's irrational, they're lying. That's all they're doing. They're lying. It's just they have chosen to side on materialism, not on spiritualism, or that there is something outside of the material. That's their choice, and that's fine. You made that choice, and you have to live with that choice. And if you die and there is an afterlife, you're going to have to deal with that choice also. But those people that choose the other view have, from our perspective, more rational proofs. Because this idea that this, you know, just popped into existence, just popped in, you know, like my hand wasn't designed, and then you're going to tell me, well, it was a selfish gene. Selfish gene? Selfish gene? Like, where did it get its selfishness from? So the gene has a personality, and it happens to be a selfish personality as opposed to an altruistic gene? Really? I mean, think about just how they talk about it. And then natural selection did this. I've read their books. And then natural selection seems to just do a lot of things that it wants to do. Where did it get that will to do things? Where did it get the will? Where did the irada come from? Seriously, don't be fooled by sophistry and by language and by... Think about these things at a deeper level. And some of you that are in universities, you know, these people have been, they've been brainwashed, you know, they've been trained in certain ways of thinking, and it becomes really difficult for them to see. But if you've had, you know, great teachers, or if you've read the great teachers of the past, these people weren't stupid people. You know, Newton believed in an afterlife. He wasn't a stupid person. You know, Isaac Newton wrote a commentary on the Bible. And half of their science is based on his insights. Really, without Newton, you know, this modern world doesn't even exist. Leibniz believed in God. That's where they got their calculus from, to deny God.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Back on March 11, 2012, a U.S. Army sergeant horrifically killed at least 16 civilians, including 9 children, and wounded 6 others in Panjwayi district of Kandahar province. Today, Afghans recall the killings as shocking and inhuman, saying they can't forget about the U.S. war crimes in their country.
Around 10 years ago, a terrifying shooting was carried out on my relatives in the Zangawad village in Kandahar. It was like a nightmare. I can't forget it. American forces opened fire on civilians, including children and women. We did protests against the U.S. and didn't let them sweep it under the carpet. Americans should be held accountable for their war crimes in Afghanistan.
Sayed Ishaq Gilani was a former Afghan MP. He led the Afghan team to investigate the Panjwayi mass killing. He denies an individual act, saying it was planned and more Americans were involved.
Throughout our investigation, we found out that there was more than one shooter. We saw 20 footprints of the American forces at the scenes of crimes. The incident was shocking and tragic. It looked like a group of U.S. soldiers had done that. Then they blamed everything on one of their drunk teammates. The U.S. forces threatened the local people not to tell us the truth.
Sardar Muhammad, the lawyer of the victim's family, says that the U.S. Army threatened him and didn't let him pursue the file.
After the mass killing, the victim's family chose me as the lawyer. At 2 rounds of trial, the American sergeant Robert Bales was sentenced to death, and it was what the family wanted. But before going to the last trial, Americans threatened me because I was insisting on execution of the murderer. I don't know what happened in the last trial, as the Americans selected one of themselves as the lawyer of the victim's families instead of me.
After 20 years of invasion, the U.S. and its allies hastily abandoned Afghanistan in mid-August last year, leaving Afghans with sad and heartbreaking memories. People in Afghanistan associate the U.S. invasion of their country with destruction, nightraids, and rights violation. They say the U.S. should be held accountable for its war crimes in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
At the Palace of Versailles, famed as the seat of absolute autocracy and anti-democracy, the leaders of the European Union met in order to discuss possibly historic reversals of long-standing policies as a response to the conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
The challenge is to leave the summit with a firm declaration that a peak of new sanctions is reached, that they will be applied, and that everyone is ready to move towards the same decisions, such as freezing assets of both the Russian central bank and private banks, sanctions on those close to Europe, and reducing gas purchases.
Russia is the biggest supplier of fossil fuels to the European Union, and the meeting will discuss how to reduce as much as 2/3 of its natural gas needs from Russia within a year. That is expected to be extremely painful for businesses and households, and would force a reversal of green energy policies, which many European politicians have insisted were of apocalyptic importance for many years. One of the key arguments often used to defend the EU is that it is responsible for an era of European peace. But many say the two-day conference may provide the foundations for a new European army. For the first time, the EU has sent lethal weapons, even though the bloc won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2012. More than half of Europe has already sent arms to Ukraine, further escalating the conflict.
There needs to be a form of strategic autonomy, which Macron keeps repeating. And if not independence, then less dependence from both Washington and Moscow. The consequences of this conflict will be felt on Europe. So Europe needs to show unprecedented unity and swiftness.
To fund these changes, the leaders are discussing a potentially massive bond sale similar to the bloc's $2 trillion COVID rescue fund, and which they refused to do during the age of austerity. The latest round of Russia-Ukraine peace talks in Turkey failed to make any progress at all. The fallout from the conflict in the Ukraine is provoking massive shifts in historical developments and with a rapidity that few imagine possible. If the two countries can't make peace soon, the world may look very different very quickly. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Nigerians under the umbrella of the Concerned Abuja Indigenes said the Nigerian government's refusal to release the travel documents of Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki and his wife Zinat is part of the unjustifiable oppression of the Islamic cleric and his wife. The group said Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki has been brutalized in Zaria in December 2015, resulting in the murder of his six sons and thousands of his followers. They said the Islamic cleric has remained resolute and law-abiding, so there is need for the court to resolve the issue of his travel documents immediately.
Do we expect him dead before the judgment concluded? This is what we are talking about. If the court should keep on delaying, consigning the release of the traveling document, what do we do while the sickness keep on eating the body?
The Abuja Concerned Indigenes said Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki and his wife Zinat have dangerous levels of lead and cadmium in their blood and needed to be hospitalized. They said delaying the medical trip of Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat is an infringement on their rights.
The Constitution of Nigeria has given every individual a right to express, right of movement, right to medication, right of everything, socially. So if right has been given to every individual citizen of the country, why is Sheikh being deprived?
A Kaduna High Court had freed Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat since July 28, 2021. The Islamic cleric and his wife had dragged the Nigerian government to court over its refusal to release their passports to go for medical treatment abroad. Danjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
Already struggling with the cost of living crisis, ordinary Europeans are now feeling the pinch at the pump, with the conflict in Ukraine pushing up the already high food and fuel prices. As plans to phase out oil imports from Russia are drawn up, the ripple effects of the Ukraine crisis are being felt across the continent.
Here in London, people are feeling the economic cost of the ongoing military conflict in Ukraine at the gas pump. Prices have been rising steadily since the start of the year and have now hit a record high. And what that means is that it's going to have a knock-on effect on the cost of transporting goods and, by extension, on the already rising cost of living.
Russia is the world's second largest exporter of oil. The EU imports 27% of its oil from Russia, the UK 11%, and the US just 8%. Which is why Europe will feel the effect of the bans far more acutely than the U.S. The EU also plans to slash its dependency on Russian gas by two-thirds this year. That's 26% of their supply.
It's hard, bloody hard, but it's possible if we're willing to go further
and faster than we've done before.
But to make it possible, experts say the Europeans will have to make difficult compromises.
For the new government and Germany actually now saying, actually, we're going to bring back nuclear. Well, that was one of the key things, that they were going to get rid of nuclear completely, very quickly indeed. Then also coal, getting rid of the coal-burning power stations, and particularly those from maybe the using Polish coal, brown coal, which is incredibly dirty.
But could all this have been prevented? While the U.S. and Europe blame Russia's ongoing military offensive in Ukraine for the soaring energy costs, some experts say it's a crisis that could have been averted.
One of the great things about international affairs is to understand not just what you want to achieve, but what the other side wants to achieve. And where's the middle path? Russia generally would want to have a working relationship to protect its security, to make sure its confidence is there. And you know, instead of necessarily having people who are American allies literally a few hundred miles away from your capital, that's something they're not used to. So really understand their nervousness, now try and work out how to deal with it. But we've left it too late.
The new plans will mean less oil revenues for Russia and a faster transition to cleaner energy. But what it also means is a higher risk of inflation and recession across the continent. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Yuan has launched its futures contracts for the first time in the history of its energy exchange market. The futures contracts were launched for the NAFTA and methanol trades. According to experts, futures are some very important instruments for the market balance. If other energy carriers, and especially oil, gas and petrochemical companies, join Yuan's energy exchange on futures platform, Yuan's crude oil and gas is capable enough to be turned into a benchmark for pricing in the region.
As Iran has the largest oil and gas reserves in the world, the pricing benchmark for our gas and oil should not be elsewhere. The fact is that we should have our own pricing reference for our natural gas in the region. We hope that with the launch of futures and cooperation of all companies in the field of oil and gas, such a thing will happen.
Futures are some very important instruments for the market balance, while they are also some strong hedging tools. They provide investment opportunities for those who are seeking the amount of profit more than they can earn in the normal market deals.
Futures contracts are financial contracts obligating the buyer to purchase an asset or the seller to sell an asset at a predetermined date and price in the future.
The launch of futures trade markets at Yuan's energy exchange will contribute to transparency and the predictability of Yuan's economy. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Islamic Jihad movement held a national conference for women in the Gaza Strip on the occasion of International Women's Day. The conference, titled Woman is the Icon of Resistance, highlighted the role of Palestinian women in fighting the Israeli occupation and their struggle for freedom and justice. Palestinian women in the Gaza Strip paid a heavy toll during Israel's war on coastal enclave last year. According to human rights groups, the Israeli regime killed 60 women and 22 children in 2021.
We are supporting our women. We called the international, we addressed the international human rights to support our women, asking the international committee to protect the women, to protect the children, to stop the occupation forces against the women in Palestine.
Addressing the conference through satellite transmission, Islamic Jihad Secretary General Dr. Ziad Nakhala praised the role of Palestinian women in their struggle against the Israeli regime for more than seven decades.
Palestinian women will not allow anyone to stop her resistance, consider it to be a red line. Palestinian women share military and political struggle with men. Palestinian women has given a lot for her homeland and pride.
Conference attendees discussed ways of developing new strategies for women to confront the Israeli regime and its illegal practices, especially against women.
Palestinian women today meeting in Gaza to discuss about the role for women, for Palestinian women, and to discuss issues about how to defend the Palestinian in Palestine.
The annual event also tackled ways of bringing international attention to the plight of Palestinian women.
Palestinian women say that they will continue their struggle against the Israeli regime
until the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken wrapped up a visit to the leaders of six European nations, plus a visit with the European Union and Israel's foreign minister, with a closed-door meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron. Washington has just announced a ban on Russian fossil fuels, but Blinken has apparently not convinced the European Union to immediately sever energy ties with their primary supplier. Russia announced they would cut its oil supplies to Europe if they introduced energy sanctions, which would have a devastating economic impact, perhaps globally. In what many say is an effort to avoid peace and increase the likelihood of a major war, Blinken recently announced that NATO members can send fighter jets to Ukraine. The U.S. and Europe have already provided significant military aid to Ukraine and imposed sanctions so potentially sweeping that Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin recently said they were, quote, like a war.
France is not directly concerned in this conflict, and yet they've already overdone it. When their foreign minister declared an all-out economic and financial war against Russia, that is an act of war. However, there's no economic coherence here because Europe completely depends on Russia for gas, petrol, and titanium, while the loss of export sales to Russia would be a catastrophe for European agriculture.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky recently announced that he, quote, understood that NATO is not prepared to accept Ukraine, end quote, which appears to be a concession to one of Russia's primary demands to end its military operation. The risk of expanding the conflict is a major concern, and with Washington giving Russia a cold shoulder since their offensive, Macron has served as the West's primary mediator with Moscow.
Macron has failed in his mediations because he and Germany have not been able to convince Ukraine to respect the Minsk agreements. If Macron had been able to convince Ukraine of this, then things could have been quite different. France should have been able to achieve this, but the United States obviously didn't want it.
Since 2014, some 14,000 people have been killed in Ukraine. Russia's offensive on February 24th has produced almost 500 civilian deaths and nearly 2 million refugees, according to the United Nations. In recent years, many politicians have argued that the European Union is necessary in order to have peace on the continent. However, forming an EU army, sending arms within Europe, and waging a sanctions war which is sure to hurt the Russian people doesn't seem peaceful to many. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Members of Iran's Assembly of Experts have held their second biennial meeting this year. That's the ninth official session of the current assembly, which was elected in 2016.
Members of the Assembly of Experts convene twice a year to review the latest domestic and global issues. This time, Ebrahim Raisi, who's one of the Assembly's members, has participated as Iran's president.
Raisi was invited to highlight his administration's achievements and review the challenges it faces. During the session, Chairman of the Assembly of Experts, Ahmad Jannati, urged President Raisi to take practical steps to address the economic problems of Iranians and improve their livelihood.
We need to improve the livelihood of the less privileged strata. The Honorable President must take steps to make this happen. I hope other members of this cabinet follow suit and help the needy have a better life. This is the least we should do as a duty.
The Assembly of Experts was established in 1983, almost 4 years after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Its main task is to monitor the performance of the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution. The experts should also elect a new leader in the event of the demise, resignation, or dismissal of the current leader.
The Assembly of Experts was the entity that elected Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei as the new leader after Imam Khomeini passed away in 1988. Not only does it supervise the performance of the leader, but it plays a crucial role in protecting the political establishment.
The Assembly of Experts is currently a body of 88 Islamic jurists. The entity consists of a leadership council and six committees. Members are elected by direct public vote for an 8-year term. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Palestinians rallied on Monday in front of the Red Cross office in Gaza to drum up support for thousands of prisoners held in Israeli jails. Their solidarity action comes as around 450 administrative detainees have been refusing to show up for their military court hearings for the third month in a row. Administrative detainees are denied due process, and their detention orders can be renewed for indefinite periods of time.
For the third month, the Palestinian administrative detainees are boycotting the Israeli military courts in order to protest the administrative detention. And now the Palestinian detainees need all kinds of support by the Palestinian community and the international community.
Palestinian prisoners are also subject to torture and psychological pressure by the Israeli prison authorities, including daily raids and solitary confinement. Currently, some 5,000 Palestinians are languishing inside Israeli jails, including minors and women.
The Israeli administration, they conducted series of attacks and aggression against prisoners, especially women. This gathering asking international community to put pressure to Israeli government in order to facilitate their rights and stop the aggression against Palestinian prisoners.
Palestinian prisoners regularly stage hunger strikes in protest against both the administrative detention policy and harsh detention conditions. Prisoners' advocacy groups have raised the alarm over the inhumane conditions inside Israeli jails.
Nowadays, the situation is going to explode inside Israeli prisons because of the Israeli measures that aimed to break the will of Palestinian detainees and to confiscate their rights.
Experts say Palestinian prisoners will continue to suffer inside Israeli jails as long as the international community keeps turning a blind eye to Tel Aviv's violations of their rights. Statistics by human rights groups show that the Israeli regime has arrested over 1 million Palestinians since 1967. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Joint statement by the diplomatic missions of the Western countries in Islamabad has created an uproar in Pakistan. The statement posted on the social media platforms presses Pakistan to condemn Russia. The statement was signed by the envoys of European countries and endorsed by the US Embassy in Islamabad. The move by the Western diplomatic missions here has drawn strong reaction from the Pakistani government. The Foreign Office has summoned the envoys of the Western countries to tell them that issuing public statements against the host country is not in line with the diplomatic protocols. On Sunday, Prime Minister Imran Khan doubled down on the European ambassadors and made it clear that Pakistan is not their slave.
I want to ask the European ambassadors, did you write such a letter to India? What do you think of us? Are we your slaves? That whatever you say, we will do.
Pakistan has maintained a fine balance in the ongoing conflict between Russia and the West over Ukraine. The reason Pakistan refused to condemn Russia stems from its growing ties with Moscow.
The only thing that I can say from Pakistan's government perspective that Pakistan wants de-escalation. Honestly, Pakistan wants end of the war or end of bombing or end of aggression anywhere for that matter in the world.
Pakistan has remained in the Western camp for decades, but now wants to diversify its foreign policy options. It was because of this reason that despite pressure from the West, Pakistan abstained from the voting on a resolution against Russia at the UN General Assembly session. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The EU's hypocrisy seems boundless. The European Union funds research involving Israeli regime's police, despite admitting that it may be used for spying purposes. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by David Cronin, writer. This article is titled, EU admits teaming up with Israeli regime police enables mass surveillance. Stay tuned for more. The European Union funds research involving Israeli regime's police, despite admitting that it may be used for spying purposes. Over the past few years, a project named Roxanne has been examining how criminals can be identified with the aid of speech recognition technology and visual analysis. Material intended for public consumption presents the EU finance project costing $8 million as benign. However, serious ethical issues have been raised when it was discussed behind closed doors. Internal EU documents obtained under Freedom of Information rules confirm there is a risk that Roxanne's results will be used for mass surveillance. An ethics check on the project conducted during 2020 refers to plans that personal data will be shared between the EU and the Zionist regime. The data collected during the project will incorporate special categories such as details on the genetic traits, health, lifestyle, political opinion, religious or philosophical conviction of individuals, according to that paper. The surrounding questions have become even more pertinent since the ethics check was carried out. Painstaking investigations by human rights groups proved last year that the Zionist regime's Pegasus spyware is being used more widely than was previously known to monitor campaigners and journalists in various countries. The Zionist regime's police and its public security ministry are among the participants in Roxanne. A condition of their involvement is that all data they export to the EU should be collected lawfully. Providing assurances of legal behavior is apparently deemed sufficient for the purposes of EU ethics checks to demonstrate that privacy issues are being treated seriously. In the real world, an Israeli assurance is completely worthless. The Zionist regime's police are seeking new powers that would allow greater surveillance without requiring warrants. A key proposal is that cameras in public places could be used to match people's faces with details found on police databases. Such a recommendation should, in itself, disqualify the Zionist regime's police from Roxen, which pays lip service to the principle of privacy awareness. There are, of course, numerous other reasons why the Zionist regime's police should not be benefiting from EU science grants. One major reason is that the Zionist regime's police are institutionally racist. A recent Human Rights Watch report on Lid, a city within the occupied Palestinian territories, also known as Lod, contains a vivid example of police racism. The report describes how police fire tear gas and stun grenades at a protest by Palestinian citizens of occupied territories in Lod last May. Yet, in some cases, when Jewish extremists attacked Palestinians in the same city that month, the police either stood by or failed to protect Palestinians from harm. The Zionist regime's police and public security ministry both have their headquarters in East Al-Quds, which has been under military occupation since 1967. Doing business with them should, by definition, be off-limits for the European Union, which is nominally committed to avoiding action that would lend the capture and colonization of East Al-Quds any legitimacy. There are strong indications that the Zionist regime has not been entirely candid with administrators in Brussels. Documents for Roxen Project give an address inside the occupied territories as the official contact for the public security ministry. If Brussels officials consulted the ministry's website, they would learn that its main offices can be actually found on Clermont Gano Street in East Al-Quds. The involvement of the Zionist regime's police and public security ministry in Roxen and another EU-funded project called Law Train has sparked protest from the Palestine Solidarity Movement. More protest is needed. The Zionist regime's police and its public security ministry have been admitted into at least 8 other projects under Horizon 2020, the EU's current research fund. Among them are 2 border surveillance initiatives, Andromeda and Safe Shore. As border surveillance has become synonymous with cruelty toward refugees, questions must be asked about the precise role being played by the Zionist regime's racist police. A particularly troubling aspect of all this cooperation is that boasts made by the Zionist regime police are seemingly taken at face value. An EU-funded project called Shuttle is building a database of blood, gunshot residues, hair, and saliva. The Zionist regime's police force is taking part and will contribute its experience as a forensic expert and technological leader, according to Shuttle website. There is no acknowledgement that the Zionist regime is actually an expert in operation. By awarding research grants to the Zionist regime police, the EU is rewarding a force that detains Palestinian children, terrifies entire families by invading their homes, and opens fire on worshippers in Al-Quds Al-Aqsa Mosque. The EU's hypocrisy seems boundless. Shortly before Hisham Abu Hawash ended his hunger strike earlier this week, EU diplomats proclaimed themselves seriously concerned about his health. The diplomats were not concerned enough to demand that the EU stop cooperating with the Zionist regime's public security ministry, the regime's department overseeing the prisons where Abu Hawash and many other Palestinians are locked up without charge or trial. In December, an agreement was signed so that the Zionist regime can benefit from the EU's next research fund. Named Horizon Europe, the fund has an overall budget of approximately $110 billion. Predictably, the EU promoted the new agreement by celebrating how its cooperation with the Zionist regime has supposedly brought great advancements in medicine and environmental protection. Just as predictably, there was no mention that the cooperation is a cash cow for the Zionist regime's racist police.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners. This is The Lantern, and thank you very much for joining us on this brand new episode of the show, coming to you not live from the studios of IRIB English Radio. I'm a firm believer that too much of anything can be destructive. Anything. I regret to say even chai. I can't live without chai. I'm not even ashamed of it. I admit, I confess, I cannot live without chai. But unfortunately, I mean, I don't know what science has been doing for the past few thousand years, but even too much of chai can, you know, have harmful effects. It's sad, but it's true. Too much of water, too much of a good food, too much of... too much supplements even, too much vitamin D in our system, too much iron, too much calcium, all of that. A hadith tells us that there's only one thing that you can never have too much of. And we'll find out what it is right after this short little story, heartfelt story about a father and his wholesome prayer for his baby girl. And we'll be right back.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, dear friend, salam. So welcome to this episode of Lantern. Today we have a new story. Let's see what's our story for today. Wish You Enough. That is the title of today's story. At an airport, I overheard a father and a daughter in their last moments together. They had announced her plans departure and standing near the door. He said to his daughter, I love you. I wish you enough. She said, Daddy, our life together has been more than enough. Your love is all I ever needed. I wish you enough too, Daddy. They kissed goodbye and she left. He walked over toward the window where I was seated. Standing there, I could see he wanted and needed to cry. I tried not to intrude on his privacy, but he welcomed me in by asking, did you ever say goodbye to someone knowing it would be forever? Yes, I have, I replied. Saying that brought back memories I had of expressing my love and appreciation for all my dad had done for me, recognizing that his days were limited. I took the time to tell him face to face how much he meant to me. So I knew what this man was experiencing. Forgive me for asking, but why is this forever goodbye? I asked. I'm old and she lived much too far away. I have challenges ahead and the reality is her next trip back will be for my funeral, he said. When you were saying goodbye, I heard you say, I wish you enough. May I ask what that means? He began to smile. That is a wish that has been handed down from other generations. My parents used to say it to everyone. He paused for a moment and looking up as if trying to remember it in detail, he smiled even more. When we said, I wish you enough, we were wanting the other person to have a life filled with enough good things to sustain them. He continued and then turning toward me, he shared the following as if he were reciting it from memory. I wish you enough sun to keep your attitude bright. I wish you enough rain to appreciate the sun more. I wish you enough happiness to keep your spirit alive. I wish you enough pain so that the smallest joys in life appear much bigger. I wish you enough gain to satisfy your wanting. I wish you enough loss to appreciate all that you possess. I wish enough hellos to get you through the final goodbye. He then began to sob and walked away.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Right, so it's a very interesting story that, I mean the way this father, or the author of the story, I'm not sure if it's a real story, I highly doubt it, but the way the writer of this anecdote, his choice of words, or her choice of words, and the terminology that was used, and how it gives you some really deep perspective and insight on what to expect from life, really. Enough of, I wish you enough of anything, as in a sufficient amount of it. And that definitely differs from one person to another, doesn't it? From one, even for the same person, but in different situations and contexts and periods in their lives. Like a newborn stomach is the size of an almond and, you know, maybe 2-3 teaspoons of milk would be enough. But then the same child, 2 months later, they need more than that amount of milk. And fast forward, there are 32 and they're lactose intolerant entirely. it's a funny world. But the ahadith, that one thing that we were talking about, that ahadith tell us you can never have enough of. You can never overdo. There's no surplus in how much you can do it, how much you can engage in it, how much you can occupy yourself with it, is the remembrance of Allah. And once you really think about it, it's so interesting because remembrance of Allah isn't just salat or, you know, holding a subha, a rosary in your hands and doing dhikr or, you know, reciting the Quran or reading. Or even contemplating, which is like the highest form of ibadah. Contemplation, which, you know, results in action and growth, of course. Not definitely contemplating about whether or not penguins have knees. Which, you know, if you really think about it, you do the research and then you realize that, okay, they don't have knees, but they function pretty well, though they walk funny and, ah, subhanAllah, the power of God, and this and that. And then you go into a documentary loop on YouTube and it's all of a sudden 3 in the morning and you have to wake up for work. if you're feeling attacked, I'm sorry. Remembering Allah, the one thing that you can never have too much of, you can never do too much, isn't just dhikr or salat, right? It's a state of being where Allah has such a profound and significant position in your heart that it has been in satisfying Him has been ingrained into your subconscious. And everything you do is automatically for His sake. You know, He's your priority in life. He's your number one. And then once that happens, disclaimer, I am no scholar or mujtahida or marja'a. I'm just voicing my own personal experiences and spiritual journey, and I have such a long way to go. But the point is that once you have that, there can never be too much dhikr, remembrance, not dhikr with your lips, dhikr as in remembrance, the actual literal meaning of it, remembrance of God going on in your life, you can usually tell when you've had enough of something, because it kind of throws your compass that points toward God off, you know? And then you will be able to develop a sort of balance in everything that you do. You won't overdo it. You won't resort to ifrat or tafreet, the two extremes. And I think that is the whole objective of Islam at the end of the day, to create moderation in our lives. It doesn't tell us to, you know, forsake the material world entirely and go live in a cave and just pray and fast and contemplate all the time. Nor does it tell us to be so obsessed and engaged with the material world that we forget our final destination. And once we have that sort of view, that sort of mindset in our lives, we will be slowly able to develop the sense, the cognition, to recognize when something is off, something is extravagant, and it's not in alignment with that needle that is meant to point toward God anymore. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ana bi dhikrillahi
tatma'innul qulub. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.